Welcome to 5-Minute Journal Club, TROP2 directed antibody drug conjugates in breast cancer treatment. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. I met with Dr. Kevin Kalinske from the Winship Cancer Institute at Emory University in Atlanta to discuss several key papers and presentations on this topic. While Dato-DXd presents an important new treatment option for patients, like all ADCs, the side effect profile includes several novel potential toxicities. The next two papers highlight a number of critical management strategies in preventing and mitigating these toxicities, including oral mucositis stomatitis, interstitial lung disease, and ocular surface events with Dato. I asked Dr. Kalinske to summarize the key points in these papers and his own clinical experience.
Let's talk about the stomatitis first, because I think that this is an important side effect that's really distinguishing it from some of the other agents that we're giving, in particular ADCs and chemotherapy. You know, I think if we look at the rate of having some stomatitis, you know, this is something that was really seen in the earlier studies. And in the randomized global trials, there was really a movement for patients to be utilizing prophylactic steroid rinse. But also one of the limitations is not every country has availability of these. In the U.S., we do. This is something that is recommended that they utilize this up to four times a day. Also, one of the things that has been discussed for prevention of the stomatitis has been, you know, utilizing cryotherapy. So even during chemotherapy, utilizing cold chips with ice can be very helpful. And then other important things like, you know, gently brushing and daily flossing, et cetera. And so for the stomatitis, if one experiences a grade one stomatitis, one would continue the dose. But if it becomes higher, like grade two or higher, you might need to dose reduce. And certainly if it becomes grade four, you need to stop Dato-DXd. And that would be very significant. But again, I can't emphasize it enough. It's important when you're starting a patient with Dato-DXd that you're utilizing the prophylactic rinse, because one bad experience could really temper one's enthusiasm for using the drug. And then the other question that's come up is just in regards to ILD, right? Because we see with Dato-DXd, it's the same payload. We could see grade one or two events of about 10% with T-DXd. I will say with Dato-DXd, the rate has been lower. You know, we're seeing rates of ILD, you know, depending upon the study, but somewhere in at least the breast experience, it's been about 3% or so. In lung, it's been a little bit higher. But the recommendations are to closely monitor this. And, you know, if patients have ILD that's greater than grade one, you need to hold the dose and, you know, think about for patients with ILD, just making sure that patients are not symptomatic. And if they are, then, you know, one, if it's grade two or higher, similar to how we think about with T-DXd, but for Dato-DXd, you should discontinue. And you may need to use steroids, et cetera. I would think about this similar to what we're doing with T-DXd. You know, I think we're still trying to identify predictors of who experiences ILD. You know, we have some work that's ongoing here where we're trying to use radiomics, trying to use AI to identify potential predictors. I think one of the interesting things with Dato-DXd is we did see that the rate of ILD is higher in lung compared to breast. And so it does ask the question, you know, is one of the predictors, oh, you've had prior radiation, or, you know, are you a heavy smoker, or is your lung performance quite not the same? And so it is an interesting observation, but at least in breast, you know, the finding that in Dato-DXd, ILD is lower than we see with T-DXd certainly raises that as a good hypothesis. And then lastly, the other toxicity would be ocular issues, because there were things like keratitis that were seen or irritation of the eyes. One of the things that really we've been stressing to patients is just utilization of prophylactic eye drops and with, you know, normal saline, and then also to not be wearing contacts. I will say when patients have been following that, at least in my experience, I haven't seen much in the way of ocular issues. And it's just demonstrating how complicated management can be for our patients. And, you know, we're also becoming experts in endocrinology and cardiology and ocular management, right? And so not everybody has access to an ophthalmologist in a quick way, which is why it's important to detect those sort of symptoms early.
And again, do you preemptively send your patients on Dato to an ophthalmologist, or you wait and hold off?
Yeah, I mean, this was something that was discussed as we started to utilize Dato DXD in clinic. We're not sending them prophylactically, but we just have a low threshold if patients are starting to have even the beginning of symptoms.
While TROP2 targeting ADCs are currently approved in the metastatic setting, these agents are also being evaluated in localized disease. Two papers published in Nature Medicine reported data from the I-SPY 2.2 phase 2 trial, in which Dato was used alone or combined with durvalumab in 106 patients in the neoadjuvant setting. Dr. Kalinske commented on this fascinating research.
I think that ADCs are going to come into the operable setting. We can meet again down the road and see if I was accurate in this prediction or not. But I do feel like these agents will be approved in the residual disease setting. We do have data for newly diagnosed. So, you know, again, early stage patients getting neoadjuvant therapy. There were two ongoing studies, and actually these data were presented simultaneously and reported in Nature Medicine in a concurrent publication, you know, meaning published at the same time, one of Dato alone. And so in the Dato study, again, you know, now I-SPY has Block A, and if patients are likely to have radiographic response, they can go straight to surgery. If not, then they go on to get additional chemotherapy. And with Dato, you know, what we're looking for in I-SPY is to see, is the response enough that it would likely graduate and be successful in a phase 3 trial. Unfortunately, Dato alone did not, but they saw some really nice responses in patients with triple negative breast cancer that were immune and also deficient, as well as deficient in what appeared to be homologous repair deficiencies. So there was a subpopulation of patients who seemed to in particular benefit from Dato alone. And then they looked at Dato plus Durva. Again, you know, significant added toxicity that was concerning, where you would be concerned about not looking in this combination. And then Dato DXD plus Durva did graduate for patients who had triple negative disease.
Can you talk a little bit more about how they did this sort of response guided approach?
Yeah. So the way that in I-SPY it works, and also I will say I had a patient who went on to Dato alone, and maybe I'll use her as an example. She went on to Dato alone. She was a research pharmacist. Went on to Dato alone. She received her cycles of Dato DXD. So she had pre-treatment breast MRI and then had subsequent MRIs, including at the completion of her Dato. And then based upon what that MRI shows, it then indicates what is the likelihood that a patient is going to have a PCR or not. And these are really based upon, you know, years of looking within the I-SPY data set to see, could we use breast MRI as an integral marker for determination of whether patients need more treatment or not. So this particular patient, based upon her breast MRI, they said, oh, she's likely to have a PCR. So she went straight to surgery, and in fact, she had a PCR. If patients are not likely to have a PCR, then they go on to Block B. And Block B is essentially meant to be graduated arms. So it may be standard of care chemo with IO, or based upon the subtype, it may be, oh, you know, this arm has graduated in the past, so you get access to this. And then again, you have breast MRIs that are done. And if a patient is likely to have a response to Block B, meaning a PCR to Block B, they go straight to surgery. If not, then they go on to essentially receive anthracycline-based treatment and then complete that Block C and then go on to get surgery.
Another recent data set evaluating a TROP2 ADC in localized disease was presented at the 2025 ASCO meeting. The NEOSTAR trial, which combines sacituzumab and pembrolizumab as neoadjuvant therapy for triple-negative breast cancer. I asked Dr. Kalinske about his thoughts on the design and results of this study.
At ASCO, we saw some data from NEOSTAR, which was looking at SG plus Pembro. And what we saw with this is that there were some patients. So again, this is getting SG plus Pembro. This is for four cycles, just four cycles of treatment, not getting, you know, traditional chemo, just those four cycles of treatment. And they saw a PCR rate of about a third. And so the combo's active. It does continue to have this question is like, what's likely to predict benefit and or not? And so this isn't something that I'm doing outside of a clinical trial yet, but I do think that there's activity in the operable setting. And to me, as I mentioned, I think the likely initial approval is going to be in the context of residual disease. The NeoStar study, you had to have T2 disease. You were allowed to be a low ER expressor. And then you got 12 weeks of therapy, right? So you got SG plus Pembro. Then you had imaging at 12 weeks. And then if you were likely to have no residual disease based upon that imaging, you could go straight to surgery. And then if you went to surgery and you had a PCR, you were able to utilize investigator discretion and, you know, consider giving a taxane carbo with every 3-week Pembro to complete a year. But it was up to the investigator to decide along with the physician. If patients had residual disease, you gave adjuvant therapy per investigator choice. Let's say you had those patients who had their imaging at 12 weeks and then were not suspected to have a response. You ended up then getting a biopsy. And if that biopsy confirmed that you still had residual disease, those patients went on to get neoadjuvant chemotherapy per the investigator choice before you went to surgery. Whether we talk about NeoStar or whether we're talking about I-SPY, that determination of whether you go straight to surgery is based on breast imaging. And then we finally see, okay, was that correct? Because patients go to surgery and the PCR is based upon what we see at the time of surgery.
So like Ki-67, what happens there?
Ki-67 tends to be a measure that we are thinking about in the context of endocrine-based treatments, right? Like we have these window of opportunity studies and looking at potential biologic response. Changes in Ki-67 with endocrine-based treatments has been shown to indicate how patients may do with that treatment in the adjuvant setting. So for here, when we're talking about triple-negative breast cancer, it really is more about the radiographic response and likelihood for PCR, because PCR is such an important endpoint in triple-negative breast cancer because it's a surrogate for how patients do in terms of relapse-free survival.
I was just kind of curious. I mean, do triple-negative patients usually have high Ki-67s in their tumor?
Yes. The baseline Ki-67 tends to be high in triple-negative breast cancer. We could also see that for HER2 disease. But the reduction of Ki-67 in TNBC or HER2-positive breast cancer in those neoadjuvant studies hasn't been shown to be a predictor the way that PCR can.
To complete this issue of 5-Minute Journal Club, I discussed with Dr. Kalinske another ongoing trial of a TROP2 ADC in localized disease, the International Randomized Phase 3 AFT65 ASCENT-05 OPTIMICE-RD trial evaluating the combination of sacituzumab and pembrolizumab versus pembrolizumab with or without capecitabine in patients with residual disease after neoadjuvant therapy. I asked Dr. Kalinske to comment.
Really, the question has been, when you're combining an ADC with IO, especially for these quote-unquote like less immunogenic or colder tumors, can you enhance the immune system and increase T-cell infiltration? And so I've spent some time talking about TROPION-Breast03, which is essentially Dato with or without Durva versus physician choice chemo. I would be remiss not to mention OPTIMICE-RD. OPTIMICE-RD is looking again at these patients who have triple-negative breast cancer, residual disease after getting neoadjuvant anthracycline and or taxane with or without a checkpoint inhibitor, and they are randomly assigned to SG plus Pembro for 8 cycles compared to physician choice therapy, which could be Pembro alone, or Pembro plus capecitabine, again, for 8 cycles. And so it's a similar sort of question, just with this being a 2-arm study compared to TROPION-Breast03, which is a 3-arm study.
Any of these localized trials looking at cell-free DNA, MRD?
They are embedded in the translational medicine efforts. And so, for instance, with TROPION-Breast03, you know, streck tubes are being collected, and we will plan on going and looking at that to see if that indicates risk. Because we've seen in I-SPY, for instance, that when you incorporate circulating tumor DNA along with PCR or with looking at residual cancer burden, it can further indicate prognosis and risk of recurrence.
And in general, are these, when you use cell-free DNA in studies like this, is it usually bespoke assay like Signatera or not necessarily?
The plan with these are to look at this with a bespoke assay, but also the field is rapidly changing. And the question being, you know, once these report out, because we'll look to see first, oh, well, what, you know, how was the clinical impact? And then we'll look at some of these translational efforts. We'll see whether or not the field has continued to transform with additional assays that may be even more sensitive and specific.